Go back to the Meiji era with Rurouni Kenshin Origin, the live action with us today.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Otaku Movie Anatomy.
Thanks for watching Otaku Movie Anatomy. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment on iTunes. And hit that thumbs up on YouTube and follow us at The Popcorn Talk. Yeah, yeah. Hello, everybody.
That was
a really good intro.
Thank you. That was my best radio announcer voice.
Yeah, and you just felt so inspired by the theme music that's happening
absolutely.
Right now.
Or maybe you just try to talk over it, too.
It was a little hard. That was a little hard.
Knife slashing.
But yeah. I would have to say it's some good background music, especially if you're trying to make something feel really epic.
Very epic. But I do feel like it's missing something since we're not all like trying to stab each other.
Yeah.
Like, there's something.
Oh, no. I'm actually trying to stab you, man, under the table. You just can't see my hands.
With your third arm. I got gross.
No. Yeah. Come on now. No. All right. Back to the topic. So today we're going to talk about Rurouni Kenshin, the origin live action movie. It was in theaters for a limited release last week for 3 days, which is kind of a bummer, but also really cool because
it's more than one day, and they brought it
to America, and it was in like real theaters, and not just like the really specialty ones.
It was playing at the Lemley by my house.
Wow,
I know.
But that's kind of like, crazy. I was doing some other research on older anime that when they brought over like Ninja Scroll and stuff, they had that theatrical release for that as well, but it was like
there was
no internet, so no one knew that it happened.
I think that we had like a couple anime releases like at the little tiny art cinema in the town where I grew up. Very progressive.
Well, I remember when they did like Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust.
They had theatrical releases.
That's because
it was made for American audience, but they had a little ad in the LA Times.
That's awesome.
Like a printed fucking square.
I know, because my fiance has that clipping at all.
Is it framed? Is it like?
Does
really
he have
nice?
A scrapbook of just Vampire Hunter D shit?
This is my life. Like, this is my album.
And like glitter.
All right. So who are we? I'm Max Song. You can find me at Max Salts at the Every Place, and everyone else, our usual suspects, and our special guest Emma. Introduce yourselves.
Great.
Hey everyone. I'm Yuma. You can find me ever on the internet at Yuma Ninja.
I'm Emma. I can be found all over the internet at my name, Emma Fife, EMMAFYFFE.
At my name.
Yeah.
Wow.
60%.
What's your name? Michelle?
I am Chubby Bunny Michelle. I got it right that time. You can find me everywhere
first
on the internet at I am Chubby Bunny.
All right. Well, we have to thank Funimation for giving us an advanced screening of the movie.
Yeah.
We got to see it in theaters. And when I first saw this movie, I was like, man, this movie's awesome if it wasn't on the back of an airplane seat.
Yes.
Because that's where I first saw this movie in Japan. And it was still really good, but, you know, very tiny.
Yeah.
So to see it in, like, the theaters with, like, the nice surround sound and it being bigger than a tablet – awesome.
It's like, I explained it, and I wrote an article or review on geek.com about it, but I explained it as like kind of a coming to Jesus moment. Because when you see it in the theater, you kind of get like the reactions from your fellow nerds that are just like waiting for some kind of good live action adaptation
for so long.
We sat through all the Attack on Titans. We know how bad it can get.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting for me because I had a very different experience than the rest of you did because you'd all already seen this film and I had not. And I think all of you at some point, I know certainly Michelle was very harping on me about the fact that this movie was so good that it was such a good live action adaptation. And I was like, all right, okay, cool. And then and then it came to the point where Funimation was having the screening of it and I got invited and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go watch it now. And now I actually don't want to watch the other two because it was so... until I see them on the big screen because it was such an incredible experience to see this film for the very first time on the big screen. I'm pretty sure I sat in the theater. If you're listening, you should watch on YouTube because I'm going to show you my facial expression, which was something like this like, for the entire movie.
You're like, swords!
So good. She saw the face of Kenshin Jesus.
Speaking of seeing the next two movies on the big screen, I believe Funimation is going to release it, the second movie, on September 12th to the 14th.
Yep.
And the third movie, The Legend Ends, which is the second part of the Kyoto Inferno, technically a one movie.
Yeah.
It's technically one
movie.
You have
to watch both.
A 4-hour one movie.
Yeah. So,
it's weird if you just watch the first one.
Yeah, and it's coming out on October 3rd to the 5th. So, Let's just go through some movie stats. I don't know if we... Okay, so we covered the first two movies already.
You mean the last two movies.
Sorry, the last two movies.
Kind of going out of order.
Yeah.
So we should go back and watch those two, that our review, once the movies come out.
Yeah. Right. Don't spoil it for yourself. Yeah. But the theatrical release came out in Japan on August 25th, 2012.
So it's kind of long ago. 4 years ago is so long ago.
It grossed $36 million and $60 million worldwide, so it did pretty well for a live-action anime movie.
Yeah. For a Japanese live-action, that's a lot of money.
A lot,
Because it was actually
money.
Good, and they spent real money making it, not like $5.
$5. Listen, I think they maybe spent $20 on of the Attack on Titan films.
This movie is worth 2,000 yen. Yeah.
That's your budget. Make us a great movie. We have high expectations for you.
Please make us the next Avatar.
So the synopsis is actually relatively close to the original Kenshin manga. It's his origin story when he first meets Karu and comes to the Kamiya Dojo and meets Yayiko and Sanosuke.
Oh, Yayiko.
And then they kind
the best dirty street urchin who stays dirty the whole movie.
He is very dirty.
Never like, has a bath.
Everyone else is fine.
Yeah.
Everyone else is squeaky clean, and Yayiko is just rolling in dirt all the time.
Megumi comes there dirty, and Yayiko shows her where the bath is, and he's never used it.
That's true.
Favorite else too. Like his dirty makeup is so consistently in the same spot.
It really
spot.
Is. Yeah. It really is. It's like because of like child labor laws, they only have him for one day.
Exactly. We're gonna do all the shots. All the shots.
You just stay dirty, please.
They did it all in green screen, and they just put him into the other shot.
That's not what happened. It was very good. You
draw
little kid Yayiko.
Yeah,
he's now an adult man.
Yeah.
By 2016.
All of his five scenes of him being dirty were perfect.
Yeah. He was everything that I dreamed Yayiko would be. Because, like, I remember, watching Kenshin as a kid, and this is going to be a weird tangent for a second, but I was playing Dungeons & Dragons at the time, and, like, I was obsessed with Yayiko and the fact that he was basically became Karu's apprentice, and so I wanted an apprentice character in Dungeons & Dragons
because of
Yayiko.
Did he badmouth you all the time and call you ugly?
He was the worst.
he was a little
better behaved than Yayiko.
He was a bitch in the anime. I forgot about that.
He's a total dick.
So mean to her.
He's pretty well behaved in the movie.
He's still kind of a little mean. but he needs that little bit of mean, arrogant spirit for, being Yayiko.
The movie is just like a bit rough around the edges.
Yeah.
He's just physically dirty.
Yeah.
So just to go over a little bit of the movie premise, it's set in 1868, and it's the end of the Bakumatsu War, the beginning of the Meiji era. The former assassin, Kenshin Imura, he basically decides to not kill because he killed so many people in the war that he was like, I'm done with this. And so now, in the Meiji era, this era of peace where, swords have been outlawed and samurai families are just collapsing under this new era of peace, Kenshin is sort of just this wandering samurai, and he is attacked by Karu because she thinks that he is the this killer that's going around saying that they're using the Kamiya Kisen style of sword.
To murder people.
Yeah. It's a sword that saves. And so that's how they meet. And then all of a sudden, they all kind of somehow coincidentally meet each other. And then Megumi appears. Mm-hmm. And then this whole plot just forms around Megumi. In the beginning, it was really just like, I'm a wandering guy.
Yeah, it's true. What I found in this movie that is that there's two through plots. One is redemption, I want to be a better person, and all the emotional great character arcs that happen in the movie are from that. The secondary plot just keeps Kenshin in town, that is that there is a drug lord and shit is going down and the police need him to stay and they're gonna, kidnap him and make him go to the police station to make him stay and help them. And that's how he gets caught up with Kaoru, because those drug lords are also bothering her in her dojo.
Right.
Yeah. So these two plots, the other one being kind of shitty, does keep him in town.
There's a lot for Kenshin to do.
Yeah, but it works.
Guys, he's the title character.
Yeah.
It's fine.
And so the main bad guy in this is Kanryu. Kanryu is a drug lord, and I guess he's making opium. The reason that he attacks Kamiya Kisen Dojo is because he wants to level that whole area and turn it into docks, which is why they end up attacking the dojo And I guess that's where they find Megumi, because she like kind of appears at the dojo. Like Yaiko finds Megumi,
yeah,
and then she like kind of lives in the
rain,
and then she just sort of like lives at the dojo at that point.
Like, yeah. Basically, she shows up like near the dojo on like a side street.
Yeah, with no shoes, and he's just like,
yeah, and he's like, oh, come in, I'll show you where the bath is, and then she just starts living there. Yeah.
What's really great about what happens with Megumi in this movie, because in the anime, you don't forget she was just very like sexy, like Kenshin, and like Kaido was always like, god damn it, you know, get out of my hands area. And in this movie, like, she starts, you're interested in her as a very like broken down character who's has nothing, and when she, as soon as she takes a shower and she like appears there before kind of just new people, she's able to transform herself into kind of maybe who she really is, or it's an alternate version of herself that's kind of funny and sexy.
No, I agree. I actually found that Megumi as a character, and I mean, you know, in the series it's like she eventually gets there, but because you're working with a such smaller amount of time in the film, I think they really capture her very well and make her a lot more interesting and sympathetic right from the get-go.
So this movie is actually the first two major arcs of the Kenshin manga. It would be the first season of the anime, and it's kind of this weird mix and hybrid between the two. Because those are actually three individual arcs. Jine is also one of the main antagonists in this one, where it should have actually been Aoshi, because
not in this movie.
So we're going to just go over some anime versus the movie comparison of the series.
Aoshi does not, he would have shown up at this point in the plot.
And then in the second movie, he's just there.
Yeah. The first arc, what happens is that, you know, Kenshin and Kaoru meet, and you know there's a dude that's going around being a murderer. That's the first arc. And the second arc is a Jine, and he's just sort of going around killing people, and he also meets Sanosuke during this period.
Right.
And they have to defeat Jine, and then the whole Jine captures Kaoru, and then he's like, you have to turn into the Batosai again, and then she breaks out, and he's like, whatever, and kills himself.
That was a great way to end the movie.
Yeah, and then the third major arc is when they introduced Megumi, Aoshi, and Kanryu. Because Aoshi is a part of the Oniwaba.
He is, that's right. Yeah.
And all of the hired thugs that Jine is supposed to have.
He's under
Aoshi, and the reason that they're working for him is to become the strongest group of mercenaries in this time piece or whatever. And so the difference is, in this movie, is Jine is actually working under Kanryu. Aoshi and the Oniwaban are not even a part of it at all. And the main henchmen, the two henchmen, are actually from the third like big arc that you don't actually see. That's when what is his name, the sister, that's where Samurai X Revelations happens. I can't remember the name. I know it's in here somewhere.
I mean, the thing about Kenshin is that it's so, you know, there's so much like history in it, and so some of these names are like real people in real locations, and then there's all the characters that are created for the series, and so there's a lot of people to keep track of. Absolutely. Is basically what I'm saying.
Speaking of people keeping track of, we are looking at chat. My computer's not loading.
Oh, I got it here.
Who do we got there?
Yeah, Ronaldo Villanueva is like all up in this chat.
Oh,
yeah,
that's good.
Basically saying that it was interesting how they kind of put three storylines into one, and that, you know, certain segments of it were rushed, but if you didn't know, it didn't feel, and even knowing it didn't feel rushed. Like,
like,
and
you forgot about those guys.
And I agree with them. I think that the pacing was really quite good.
I think like the only thing that like we didn't notice as we were watching it, because you know I hadn't seen it in so long. Like, we were showing our tongue. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot. There's like six bad guys at the end.
There are six bad guys.
And all the six bad guys are from an arc that there's no anime arc for it.
Yeah,
it's the end of the manga, and it never really got serialized, which sucks because that's basically how the final conclusion with Inishi being the sister that like gave Kenshin the scar from Samurai X.
Yes.
So this particular movie, I forget, also has Samurai
X stuff. It does have some Samurai X stuff.
So,
but it's quick. I was wondering, because I forgot how that went down in this movie, because they were just very quick, like, this happened, there's a lot of rain.
All they do is, like, they show him killing her fiance, yeah. and then and so then he gets his first scar, and then
they don't show
suddenly,
the second one.
Yeah. The second one just her appears. Her crying, and no, she does it. I remember her doing
no,
it.
No,
yeah. In the movie?
No,
was,
in the movie, she does it.
She does it, but it's like in a flashback scene. It's so minor.
They don't really see. You don't really see like the full story, but basically, it's like she. Basically falls in love with Kenshin, but is actually a trap to
Well, no, I know that, but I don't remember that part being in the movie.
I don't remember the second scar being in the
movie. Exactly, that's what I'm saying. I think it's in, maybe it's in the
second
movie.
I think it was only the first scar.
It was. I know that it was very, very minor. The first scar was in the fight, and I feel like at some point he'd had a flashback, and she did it, and that was it. That was like
I don't remember that
else.
Flashback. I think she said, I think the whole thing is, I looked for that. He just said it.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And the woman gave me the second scar.
Yeah, exactly. It was implied, but you didn't actually see her physically cut his face.
Exactly.
All you see is her crying.
So yeah, it was very much just like they didn't even show her face when she's crying. I think they didn't really even cast her.
She's just wailing.
Yeah. So
they didn't even cast her.
Yeah, they didn't really cast anyone
that's just
important.
A guy
they're
along
just
with.
Like,
yeah. It's like just a body over another body wailing that entire scene.
It's just a doll. It's not. It's not your person.
It's just a stunt.
Someone
a stunt
it.
Weeper. So let's see what happened.
What happened?
And so there's so many like different the nods to like all the different parts of the series, which I thought is always great. You know, it's like because you can tell that this movie was made for fans, like something that like we would all enjoy. And if you really, really, really were into the series, you'd be able to pick up on little things like just those bad guys like are just like when I first saw them, I was like. It's from the only manga season. Like that's crazy because they're cartoon characters in the manga. Like they're based after Venom. This one other dude, he like so the brawler dude. He is a guy that wears all camo and has dreadlocks and then his attack style is Sambo. Like this weird Brazilian martial arts, and he has these gauntlets, and he fights Sinosuke, and so that battle was one of them. I'm like, oh, that's crazy. Yeah. And then another Gien, which is the mask dude, this really silly looking dude, where he just like he takes off the mask a little bit.
Yeah,
he's like this the whole time. He's like edgelord.
It wasn't even attached to his head. He was just holding it
over.
Like a dick.
And then you're like, oh, that's a little weird. And then you realize that that's one piece. Yeah. That's when you just take the whole thing off.
The worst part is like, when you look at his face, I was like, it's not that bad though, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
like, you look like a normal human. You can chill.
Yeah.
I do feel like the Kenshin movies, I think in general, are very similar to like all the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where it's just like they've taken stuff from the actual source material, put it together, put Easter eggs in it for fans, and it worked on a really great level.
And and I think too, I want to just shout out Ronaldo in the chat says that he misses the ninja with the claws on his hands.
Yes, the dude that's basically Venom, and his whole thing is like he drills in the earth.
Oh my god!
He had like super like his power was to throw rocks really fast. Like, that was like his thing.
This was during the time of very gimmicky.
I forgot how gimmicky it was because this movie really glosses over the terrible shit.
It does just
kind of cool martial arts.
Yeah, I mean that, and I think that's what it. And this is just speaking to what Yume was saying about them, you know, just incorporating little bits and pieces of the series specifically for fans because it is fun as a fan to be able to pick those things out.
Yeah.
However, I think it works as a film, you know.
Yeah, it's just a normal film without any context.
I mean, I was sitting next to a couple people who were not Rurouni Kenshin fans. Mm-hmm. They were just, you know, invited to the screening, and they both were like, no, that was really good. Like,
it's a solid movie.
It works as a samurai film.
And the thing is, like, this is definitely more along, it's a little bit grittier than Kenshin, because Kenshin's... I mean, it can get pretty violent. Yeah. But
I was going to say, it's interesting because Rurouni Kenshin, the series, I agree with you, it can get really violent, but it's, like, so colorful.
It's very cheery. Like,
it
you know,
has, like, a lot of humor in the beginning of it.
Yeah. And then it just takes a dark turn. Like,
forget about those filler episodes, guys.
Yeah.
Which it does. Oh, well, those filler episodes are
way weird.
There
was a grandpa where the grandpa was in the, he was in the show.
Yeah.
Like,
Howard was not alone.
That's right. She did have a grandpa.
That's not his grandpa. That is a doctor that goes around and is also the main doctor of the village. You actually see
he's in the movie.
You know, this makes way more sense.
He's the Chinese medicine man. Yeah. That's in the movie.
Because in this movie, I remember this happening and being confused because, again, it's like the third or fourth time I've seen it. It's like, wait, The kids in the village are sick. Why are they bringing the Kaoru's dojo? She's not a doctor. And how do they know there's a doctor there? Because
right.
Megumi's like, oh, I'm a doctor. I can help. And I remember in the manga and in the anime, they bring them there because the grandpa is
right
dying.
There. Yeah.
Is staying there.
But yeah. In this movie, they're just like, you have a lot of space. Have a sick baby.
Here, have this baby.
But this is a consistent theme that we see in anime, yeah. which is that there's no greater authority than, like, the local dojo or shrine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
like, that's where you bring all your...
Yeah, it's like in every freaking episode.
It's just having so much space, you know?
It's like in Sailor Moon, anytime a child goes missing, everyone just goes to the Hikawa Shrine and, like, prays about it. It's like, guys, do you maybe want to go to the police?
Well, the police can't do anything. They don't have magical powers.
The police don't do anything.
I think it's even funnier. It's like, you know, like, when Kaoru's dojo is, like, getting trashed?
Yeah.
It's just like, all the people in the village seem to really like you and they come to your place. But at the end of them show up. Like,
they come at the very end after the shit's all done.
And they're just like, oh man, we heard a really loud noise. It's like,
there was a big group of guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, even that huge, like, mob of people.
Yeah, like, did you see them walking through the town?
I know.
Like,
they're also very...
carrying bats.
Yeah. They're all very shady characters, too.
True.
You knew that something bad was going to happen with them around.
Those neighbors fucking sat on their hands like, we love you, but not that much.
And all their kids just see, but then when all their kids get sick, like, let's turn into the dojo.
Yeah.
It's like, people suck.
Speaking of sick kids, Tsubame is actually shown in the sick kids scene when they're carrying that little girl.
The little girl.
I forgot about her.
That's Tsubame.
I totally forgot about her.
They also show Tei from Akebeko when they're eating the beef pots.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
In the scene where Snosuke first shows up in the movie, it's and so good.
Max, you should write an article about, like, 10 Easter eggs.
Those are Easter eggs.
I basically just... That's the stuff that I like got me really jazzed when I first saw that movie, you know? So that's why it's kind of always left this impression on me.
They did it with care, and they didn't just make a movie to make a big blockbuster movie. They cared about the material.
Yeah.
They made a good movie that is would just be a good movie.
Oh, damn.
But also made it so that fans could, like, actually grab onto something.
It's
so weird.
It's like the Marvel Cinematic Universe recipe. They got it.
Yeah.
So it's like, Warner Brothers, get on the ball.
Why?
Or like the rest, like Attack on Titan. Attack on Titan.
You know what? Get on that. Apparently, it's not that easy. If everyone's failing except for Marvel, who has crazy Disney money, it's like maybe they're the formula.
Well, to be fair, Kenshin didn't have crazy Disney money.
Yeah, they didn't have Disney money.
I'm sure they had a modest budget.
They had a very large budget for the kind of movie they were making.
Yeah. But to be fair, they're like, premise is a little bit easier to, like, manipulate. Like, Attack on Titans is going to be a little bit hard because, you know, they're giant titans, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give it excuses, but, you know, this samurai movies have been so part of Japanese culture.
But I feel like my problem with the Attack on Titan movies wasn't the titans per se.
It wasn't the titans.
It was everything.
It was a weird lovemaking and attempted lovemaking, baby. It's not about
Attack on Titan.
Anyway, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, they were able to treat this movie like a historical drama, and which is something that they've had a lot of practice with. Like, this wasn't their first rodeo being like, let's film something in old times in Japan. Oh, how do we make those buildings? Like,
they just
it's their own culture, so they weren't able, like...
Yep.
They had a lot less things to fuck up.
Yep.
Yeah. That's true.
Yep.
And Saito doesn't show up until the second season. I wonder if anyone remembered that.
In the manga,
he doesn't show up until Kyoto arc.
But he shows up like right at the beginning of this movie.
He sure does.
And then he's trying to find Kanryu,
The rewriting on this is very good.
It is really good.
They had to connect all these parts together, and they're like, you know what? We can't shoot every single bad guy. Let's at least just get the ones that make sense.
Yeah. And actually that speaks to what Revolutionary Chris in the chat says. Best anime to live action ever. I love part one the most because it took pieces of the anime and manga and mixed it into one movie.
Right.
And it was a story, again, like we've been saying, that was very much inspired by the source material, but wasn't just page to screen the source material. It was a really interesting, well-done interpretation of it.
And to think that, like, they kept this spirit of the characters, but was also able to, like, throw them into this narrative where it logically makes sense for them to be there.
Yeah,
it's not just like Saito is there because he's there, you know? Right. It's not just like he just wandered into the scene and is like, I'm Saito,
yeah,
you know?
It's definitely not like, like where you've seen other movies like with ensemble cast and the adaptations fail. We're just like, hey, remember me? I was in the manga. Remember
here
me?
I am.
I'm that guy.
Yes.
No, let me do my signature move for no reason.
Everything felt very justified in this. Uh-huh. And even though, yes, it did culminate in here are all the bad guys, here are all the good guys, we're just going to have a big fight.
They didn't take time to name them or do all
No, not at all. And it was, they didn't call it out. They just let it happen. And it was great.
Yeah. And then you just kind of like pick it out yourself. It's almost feels like they think that the people that are viewing the movie are intelligent.
Yes, exactly.
Which would be ridiculous because technically, if this were like a Warner Brothers movie, it would all be like, people explaining what they are. You know? I am Anishi. I am Banji, the man that fights with his fists.
It's like talking exposition.
Yeah.
Showing, not telling, guys. Give it a shot.
Yes.
So that's basically, well, there's also nostalgic Samurai X music. I don't know if you noticed that. It's just a little thing. It's not a full thing. It's just there's little like
from
bits
the
of the
OVAs,
track.
You mean? Or
from the OVAs.
So just for you guys, if anyone's listening or watching that's not from North America, we called it Rurouni Kenshin here, and then Samurai X were the OVAs. Mm-hmm. I know in the UK, everything else was called Samurai X the whole way through.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was very confusing,
it's
when this came out. Okay. I was like, what movie is this?
Well, and I remember even as, you know, a teenager or watching Rurouni Kenshin, and then the Samurai X OVAs came out, and I was like, but this is just Rurouni Kenshin.
I started watching Rurouni Kenshin, and then I rented Samurai X, and I was like, but this is Kenshin.
Yeah. Yep.
I just thought it was supposed to be like a super dramatic title, like Samurai X, and you know, because it was a little edgy.
It was very dark.
The thing that I think is interesting, though, is I feel like this film is tonally, even though, yes, the characters are very true to the characters that we see in Rurouni Kenshin, they're more, the overall tone and feel of it is a little more like the OVAs.
Yeah.
So, yes. Samurai X, if you will.
Yes. I did like that they threw in the bits of comedy, though.
Sanosuke
is like pure comedy.
Let's just talk about Sanosuke for the rest of the show. He is the best, because the thing about him,
he is Michelle's favorite character.
He's my favorite.
He's the best character.
You could take this guy out of the movie. You could take him totally out. Nothing would change at all.
So
like
true.
They would still get to the end of the problem and defeat, because he doesn't really help do anything. Yeah. He beats like one guy up. But his scenes are fucking
so
magic.
Good. They're so good. Oh my god.
Good. Him and Kenshin's like initial fight when they meet is the funniest, best thing. And the choreography is great. And he has a stupid, what's Sabato? His
Sakabato.
Yeah, the Sakabato.
Yeah.
And there's a bot and a toe in there. But it's like the giant horse killing sword that used to be used by the Mongolians.
Yeah, he only uses it twice.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't appear for the rest of the movie. It's just gone.
the rest of the series.
Yeah. The only thing about Sanosuke, though, is like I feel like they cheapened his character a little bit.
He is because, comedic relief.
I agree.
Because his history, like the reason that he is Sanosuke and the reason that he wears like evil on his back is Aku. Because of the traitorous like rebellion army.
Right,
so basically,
right.
Where the Meiji government basically betrayed like this group of people, and Sagara is his, like the commander's last thing. That's how he takes it. And so there's like this very robust story that Sanosuke has that they just basically like, because that's when it's revealed when Kenshin and him fight. And it's like, you know, you're
they talk it out.
Yeah, you're like Bakumatsu. Or you're a Meiji bastard person. And then they, like, fight each other because he was like, you know, I want to see this Meiji government is, like, so corrupt. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this is what you fought for. And in this one, it's more like they come over and he's like, I don't really want to fight anymore.
Yeah.
And that's the whole reason to him stopping.
Fight,
yeah. No, it was like, whatever, we had a brawl, I can't beat you, whatever.
Kenshin was literally like, do you really want to work for this guy? And he's like, not really.
It's like, whatever.
And then, to be fair, we're talking about characters not just popping out of the woodwork. He pops out of the woodwork, right? About when he just like shows up at Kaoru's dojo.
Yeah.
When
the sick kids, when the kids are all sick.
He's just like, I'm also here to, I'm a kid, I don't know. I'm at the dojo now because something happened in the village and everyone just goes to the dojo.
I feel like the only thing like that I can't buy about the actor who plays it, he's so skinny and so small.
He is.
And like, Sano in like, he's big.
He's beefy to carry
Mune
that beer.
Taka Aoki would be very sad to hear this.
Like, every time I see him like brawl, I'm like, but he's so willowy.
But he plays the character really well.
He's got a great like his facial feature, his emotions are really, really like they're like sun out.
I mean, oh,
like,
yeah.
Ted Sanosuke wasn't necessarily like a super huge dude. There are much bigger people than him. He was pretty waifish for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, so. I mean, though he was a tad bit shorter, as long as he's taller than Kaoru and Kenshin, he's like, you're like, okay. You skilled it, like, properly, I guess.
I can't remember, is it this movie or the next movie? Because he has that little jacket. He, like, loses, it's gone for the rest of...
Oh, that's the second one.
Second movie. Oh, in the second movie,
he definitely has a jacket. He's just got the pants, and that's it.
He's like, I just wear pants now, I've given up the life of having a jacket.
I got that wrapping, you know, I got my medieval corset.
See, maybe that's it, is that for the most part, he's been wearing the jacket in this, so I haven't really, like, because he is taller than Kenshin and Kaoru, so I haven't like really noticed how tiny he is.
In the second movie, I can't remember.
In the second movie,
he looks the same.
He looks the same, but
more oily.
No, he looks a little bit older. I would say, just a tad
bit. Like bigger thing. Like
no, he's the same way.
You notice it more in the second movie because he's not wearing the jacket.
He's not get chilly ever. He does not get the chills.
So. Michelle, you want to talk about some awesome fight choreography?
So the reason, one of the reasons this movie holds up so well is because they did not skimp on the choreography.
They did not.
This is something we didn't talk about in the last time we talked about the other movies, is that they hired Kenshin Tanigaki, who is responsible for, some people say he's responsible for making Jet Li's career. He's done a lot of really amazing martial arts films before this, a lot of classic Hong Kong action movies like Peter Chan's Dragon, Legend of the Fist, Blade 2, that was him making that stuff. So he's done, as we call them, real movies. Like, he's done real choreography for other people, not just, Japanese adaptations of things.
Uh-huh. Wait, is Legend of the Fist the same as Fist of Legend?
Yes, probably.
Yeah, maybe I just
because that's the Jet Li movie. Because I was gonna say, when you said it, I was like, well, did he do Fist of Legend? Because that is a fucking good movie.
Isn't that Legend of the Fist?
It depends on who translated it. Because I think most Americans would know it's Fist of Legend.
Well, Wikipedia translated it this way.
It's probably called that in like the actual.
Yeah, probably what that's actually called.
Yeah, literal thing. So, we get a lot of really amazing choreography. You notice that even, so whether he's one-on-one with, like, Sanosuke or, you know, just like that, the one bad guy with all the strings. What a great goddamn battle. Each battle has kind of its own characteristics. They're all kind of style of fighting they
use. I agree.
It's not really so much Kenshin that changes, is that every time he faces a new person, it's like a new jutsu, you know? Like, so we talked about Sano already, but, oh my god, when Sanosuke fights the monk... that is the best, like, Jackie Chan-esque.
That's a really good fight.
It's so good. It is. It totally is, like, Jackie Chan Kung Fu. Like, equal parts, like, totally badass fighting.
And just physical comedy.
And it's, like, it is Jackie Chan style in the sense of that he's basically using everything around him. Yes! And he's, like, kind of going through whatever is physically there.
Exactly.
And you get the feeling, like, oh, this is a brawler's brawl. Yes. This isn't just, like, say it out loud, like, hey, we're both brawlers.
let it be known.
Yes. Revolutionary Chris thinks that this has the best fight choreography of all three films.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I would say,
It has the most variety, and Ronaldo points out the anime wire work that was happening, but it was totally badass, so.
Yeah. I mean, even the Jien and Kenshin fight is, like, one of the better fights of the three movies, I would have to say, you know, just, like, the acrobatics of it all, and the fact that, you know, it's, like, wires and guns, and there's always, like, you know, he's always, like, moving around like a little Spider-Man, you know? And it just, like...
he runs so fast, his body's kind of on the ground as he runs, like, sideways against the wall. I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah. It's like, if you think about, like, every fight that happens in there, there's so many different ones, but every single one of them references something from, like, anime. Like, the one where Kenshin's fighting all the dudes in the dojo. Some of it's referential to the panels from the manga.
Yeah.
And then you have, like, the fight in the brawler's room. Like, it's all very stylistically... Yeah. appealing. I think that's what stands out the most from all three movies.
And in addition to the fight choreography being so intentional and so, you know, varied in flavor in a really good way, like the cinematography is so good.
It's so good. It's so dead on.
The way they shoot it, you like literally feel like you are involved in this fight. That this fight is happening around you currently, and it's just
there's so many like good moving parts to it.
Yeah.
Too,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which makes it really amazing.
Ben's Gaming 808 says, best usage of kendo I've seen in a movie. Mm-hmm. If only the choreographer for this did the Star Wars lightsaber fight.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, well.
Lucasfilms, get this one guy.
One day. I mean, it would be really great to see Kylo Ren just swooping around and, like, you know, doing little flips.
Yeah. Listen, I would not be opposed to that.
Yeah, I gotta say, because, like, it does, you feel like, when you, and maybe it's just like the way they're trained, the actors themselves.
Yeah.
And it's so much practical effects. Like, there's so little CG in this movie.
Yeah.
Like,
it's very, very clearly mostly practical, and it's.
Yeah, the lead does a lot of his own stunts, and it's like that face don't change. There's not a lot of things where he's not doing it. It's crazy. But anyway, it's amazing to me that, especially when you're talking about the big scenes where he's fighting a bunch of dudes, that tends to look really stupid. And, like, mm-hmm. if you watch other, like, the old Batmans where he's, like, fighting off 20 thugs, you're like, that's dumb. Like, they're all, like, waiting for him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But in this one, they really pull it off in kind of a believable way.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Well, you get, I think the way, again, just going back to the way that it's filmed, it's like you get this sense of continuous action every time a battle is happening. Mm-hmm. And you go through, it's like, every battle is almost like its own little mini story unto itself. Mm. And there is a beginning and a middle and an end, and you feel totally involved and you are carried through. And then you get back to another place where you're like, okay, the fight's over now.
Yeah.
And then it starts up again. Yeah. There's
always a good contrast, too. And I think this goes to saying that, you know, it takes a lot from the anime. Because, you know, like the anime kind of like formula is to always have the one-on-one matchups.
Yeah.
You know, and they definitely have the really great one-on-one matchups. One of the better ones is when it's Kenshin and Saito, which is one of the best fights in the series, in all of the series. And they definitely did it justice because, you know, they're fighting in the rain and they have all they're about to, like, kill each other, basically. Yeah.
I don't think he does his Gotetsu then. He only does at the end, right?
He does at the end.
Yeah. Well, no, he does his Gotetsu stance, I believe.
Does he?
I think he takes the stance.
But he doesn't
do it. He doesn't do it.
Does it only at the end when they're fighting.
And it's terrible because I was thinking to myself, does he do it? And then we get to the end, I'm like, oh, he's doing it. I forgot that he does it against the chandelier. I would, like, laugh. I was like, that sucks.
It does suck that he used the chandelier, because it would have been way cooler if he just stabbed Conrio. Like, you thought, or, like, stabbed the Gatling gun. Yeah. But then he was just like, I'm going to stab the chandelier.
The way he was jumping, he was like, he kind of went like that. And I was like, this is a little bit.
I think it was because he's not supposed to be in that fight.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true.
He's not supposed to murder anybody here.
Yeah. And so Kenshin is supposed to have the last blow, which I believe he does. No, the chandelier takes him down, right?
No, he hits him at the very end. Like, they talk for a second. He's like, oh, I can make you rich. And then he's like, no. And then, like,
that's right. Yeah. Pass.
I think that was just because they were just like, how do we fit him in here? Like, you can't really kill him. And I think it's, you know, it's not a rated R movie either. So it's like, it's not, for the most part, you have to, like, limit the violence to, like, it being cartoony. So I'm just like, not the best use of Saito, I'd say. But they were just like, we're paying this guy so much. He smoked so many cigarettes already.
So much.
We need to put him in the fight.
Cigarette the whole movie.
Yeah.
He's been working on it a long time.
That's what I would have to say. That is where it kind of falls short for me a little bit. And I was
that's your only complaint is insane.
For this
kind of movie. Like,
because, I mean, to be very fair, like, Saito was not my favorite character in the manga. Mm-hmm. But the movies have made me like that character so much more. It's definitely because of the actor.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I agree. The actor who plays him is
amazing,
phenomenal, I think that's the thing is, like, there's something about him being like a real person, and you seeing him just like chain smoking and being so like shiny and sweaty and like he's so gross. I would love him.
You know, you just kind of like think about the characters, and I would say besides Kenshin, Saito is like one of the best, like, representations of Saito.
It is.
Yeah.
The actor, his demeanor, his habits.
Yeah, he pulls it off.
Yeah, his, like, kind of posture. Like, he owns Saito. Mm-hmm. He just, like, you see him and you're like, ooh, shivers. Like, you know, like, he's a cool guy.
He looked kind of dorky as a Shinsengumi, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I didn't like the Shinsengumi part, but, like, because, like, it's, like,
he has the same hair, but he's just, like, in Shinsengumi robes.
Yeah, he looked exactly the same with the same hair. It was just weird.
Yeah, little spikes.
Oh, come on. I mean, it's,
yeah. Yeah, we do get to see at the very end of the movie, we do finally get to see Kenshin's Hiten Mitsurugi Double Dragon Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, it's such a great build up to it. Like, he slowly goes into like position, and even if you haven't seen the anime or manga and like, it's, you know, it's been like decades for us. When he starts to crouch down like that, you go, you're like, oh, it's happening! It's happening! But they don't call it the moves.
Which is
a good choice. I mean, like, it's all right, we're going to show you, not tell you.
We don't need to tell you about it, though.
Because it's not like in most anime where it's like, oh, is he doing this?
That's true.
Like in,
He's doing this move. I even feel like in anime movies that are, like, somehow a continuation of the series, they're so, like, guilty of that. Constantly they, like, call out who all of the characters are as if, like, we forgot.
It's like, we were talking about it, and we're just like, they talk about this character, and they're right next to him, like, oh, I think that's the Bato-san. Did you know?
I hear he's a slayer of men.
I totally know his secret.
Oh, it can be a little silly, and he didn't call it out. I think he does say it, though, right? Like, he explains what the move was after he breaks his arm. I think I can't remember.
Because they talk a lot sort of in the flashbacks or when they're talking about, like, this is what Kenshin's life was like before this moment. They talk a lot about the different sort of moves that he did. And so I think it was previously explained, but like when he does it, they don't take a moment to be like, this is it.
True. I think it was mentioned like early on in the backstory. But when he does it, nobody says anything about it.
Can we talk about Jinne for a little bit though? Because Jinne like ended up being a really, like, I thought he was a little silly in the beginning, because when you introduce his, like, eye powers or whatever, like, he has the eye powers in the series, so it's like, you're like, okay, I get it. But, like, in real life, it translates a little silly, like, in the beginning.
He's literally the hokiest thing in the movie.
You just see it. His acting, he's definitely one of those, like, Japanese over-actors.
Yeah, I think he must come from, like, Sentai movies or something.
It's a lot of, like, over-acting, and, like, it was just like weird. I think it was pretty funny too. Just like, especially that last scene where Kaoru's like choking, and I'm like, really?
Yeah.
That Kaoru, man, she's really good at choking. I was like, you've been doing
that. She was very good at
dirty.
She definitely does a really good I am distressed.
And I have to say, in that, like, she had some really good choking acting because you believed that she was. Yeah. It was not over the top.
It was like all the noises she was making.
I mean, yes, and to a certain extent, I was just kind of like, you don't need to finish your. You're like, you can shorten your speech a little bit. Like, I understand you're having a hard time breathing. And then it'd just be like, she'd say like three words, and she'd be like, and then say three more words, and you're like, okay. And
just like, choose your words carefully.
And then she just kept kind of going for 2 minutes. I was like, this is a little much. Maybe this is a little much.
Yeah, I feel like the two things that I thought were just like really, and was like the whole like his eye powers, and then the whole
the eye powers.
And then the whole like, this is a sword that doesn't kill. I'm like, really?
Let me explain it one more time.
This sword is not for death. And I'm like, what do you think a sword is for?
It was
such a flimsy, and it was, I mean, it wasn't like the, I mean,
that's how it is, Matt.
It was
such a flimsy thing. I'm like,
and you know, you're probably thinking like, oh yeah, all these dudes that he's hitting in the head are probably dead from concussions. Like, you know, you don't think about that. You don't think about like all the people he's maybe
damage.
Maybe he's like paralyzed. Like, it's a family movie. So, what are your favorite parts?
All of them.
Oh my god! I don't.
Favorite parts, favorite fights. You can name. You can name even more than one if you want to.
I mean, the Sanosuke fight.
Sanosuke fight's good. We can all agree that's one of our favorites.
Sanosuke fight. Yeah. And obviously, kitchen fight with Senno and monk guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the fight.
Yeah, that was the fight.
Kenshin also.
Yeah, that first. Fight between Snosuke and Kenshin was really good.
The best part about the second fight in the kitchen was the chicken part.
He just started eating the chicken. You want some chicken? And then he's like, no, I don't eat meat. And then he's just like, poor chicken. And then
he's a vegetarian. I forgot about that.
And then Sato comes in and he's just like drinking some wine. And he's like, you want some? And he's like,
All right. Yeah. Like for a second, they're like, okay, because he's kind of like, wait. Like he just kind of goes, he's like leaning backwards, like just wait. And the guy's like, oh, okay, you're talking to me. I guess I'll wait. Yeah. Like because they haven't really spoken the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. It
was
a good movie. I liked a lot of the stuff at the like raid on the mansion. Like I just thought that was really well done. That you know they built it up really well and.
The great fight was like you knew there was a bunch of people there.
Yeah.
And then he fights all those people and then it's like the way that they have it is like, you know, they introduce his style of it being like his whole thing is to be one person amongst many.
Yes.
And be able to defeat them all.
Yes.
And he does it. And you're like, totally that's so cool.
So badass.
I would have to say that one of my favorite fights is the Saito and Kenshin fight. Because that's one of the fights in the anime that's just like it left such a huge impression. And then to see that happen
like
in live action.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, for me, it's a nostalgia
just
thing.
Shit all
it's,
over
it's
his
just, no, sure, it's not as good. It's not as good as like the Jinne fight, you know, the dude with the wires fight.
Right.
But there's something about that particular scene that's so iconic, it would suck to not have it.
Yeah, because yeah. He is fighting against, like, he doesn't want to fight him, so the whole fight is him trying not to fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But having to do reflexive moves, and that's kind of, it's really interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's super interesting.
And he's supposed to get his crap kicked in. I mean, in the anime, it's, like, way more intense, and they almost basically kill each other. But,
yes, it is. I also, like, too, and we touched on it earlier, just, like, the portrayal of Megumi. Like, I liked her right off the bat.
That actress has one beat.
And I really think that even if I didn't know the character from the series, I would have felt the same way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that actress is, like, an award-winning, like, the Japanese Academy Award, she's won, like, a million times.
She was fantastic.
She's, like, super funny.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like, the actress who plays Megumi, she does a lot of things which I see a lot more in Western acting. Like, there's a lot of subtlety.
So much subtlety.
In her acting. And I was like, whoever trained you, needs to train a whole slew of Japanese actors. Because she's so good. Like, the way, like, her eyes like kind of twitch when she cries, or like the lip trembles. And I'm just like,
her, she's like a solid actress. Like, there are sometimes when Kenshin would like kind of kick me out of her
Megumi
not feeling. Megumi
never
is was
never,
always on point.
Never.
Like, I was always immersed with her performance.
Yeah.
All right. So, to the lions, I'm calling this rating system.
Okay.
So, what is it?
We do gladiators.
So, we're not doing by five anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
1, 2, 3.
We're at a 4.
All right, so we got to thank Funimation yet again and Justin Rojas for inviting us to see the awesome screening. Hopefully, we get to be invited to more and see some more awesome continuations of the Kenshin live action.
And speaking of the Blu-ray release for the first Kenshin film, the one that we discussed today, has been released. It is available for pre-order right now on if you go to Funimation Films, you can find the link to pre-order it. I cannot wait to own this. And they actually also very recently released at Otakon last week. They are actually Funimation is actually going to be doing a dub of this film.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
some people need a dub.
Yeah,
I was going to
say, be that as it may, it's like you might have feelings about like dubbing live action. That's really weird. Some people like really it really takes them out of things if they have to read subtitles.
And sometimes it's a lot to read. Yeah. I mean, even though Kenshin is a very beautiful movie, and I wouldn't necessarily want to change the dub. Like, it's good to have the option.
Yeah. It's a lot of the usual suspects from Funimation who are going to be providing the voices for this. Micah Salasad, who is doing the voice of Kenshin, is like a huge Kenshin fan. So he's so, like, he basically gets to play his dream role.
Right.
And it's not in the capacity. Of course, he would rather have like dubbed the whole freaking series. But like, this is a really cool opportunity for him.
It would have been awesome, though, if they had the original VO cast from the anime.
Yeah.
And super dope. Not all of them. Not all of them. But I mean, Kenshin was really good, I thought.
Yeah, I actually liked the guy who was Kenshin in the old dub.
I mean, I rewatched the dub recently, and I'm like, there's like really terrible parts, but for the most part,
solid. It's pretty watchable. Yeah. It really is. But some other voice actors who are involved in it. Alexis Tipton is doing the voice of Kaoru. Eric Vale, who is the voice of Trunks in Dragon Ball Z, like, you know, future Trunks, adult Trunks, teenage, you know, not baby Trunks, is the voice of Sanosuke. And Trina Nishimura, who is the voice of Mikasa in Attack on Titan is the voice of Megumi. So
cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. It sounds like it's going to be pretty awesome. Yeah. So I guess just check out and just keep in mind that September 12th to 14th, you're going to see the second movie, Kyoto Inferno. It's going to be super cool, especially if you like the Kyoto arc.
Yes,
that's awesome.
Definitely, it's worth supporting, especially if you do want to have more like
these kind of showings
come to the U.S.
Cannot stress enough how magical it was to like see this in the movie theater.
Absolutely.
Everyone needs to do this.
Yep.
So you know, give Funimation your love and support, and make sure that you're like wanting to do this. You just support them in social media, and so. In case there are other really awesome live-action movies out there, we can actually go to a theater and watch it on the big screen like it was meant to be. And that would be really, that would be, I think, culturally amazing for all of us weeaboos out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the second movie, September 12th to 14th. The third movie, October 3rd to 5th. Keep your eyes open. And what do we have for next week?
We are doing Kingsglaive, Final Fantasy 15. Holy shit. It is some madness. It's coming out in theaters around America this Friday, and then Blu-ray and shit on October. So just watch next week.
Do it.
Yep. Tune in next week.
Yep.
Nice. Tune in next week for Kingsglaive. All right. See you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Like how we wave like.
Jazz hands.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.